Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to call this meeting of the House Transportation Finance Committee to order. I'm speaking slowly because certain members have not occupied their chairs yet, in spite of the fact that they have a very important role to play in our committee business. Representative Johnson, would you like to make a motion?
I'd like to move the minutes from the last meeting.
Representative Johnson, you're not fully prepared for committee, I'm afraid.
I would like to move the minutes from the third meeting and the fourth meeting, it looks like, January 12th and January 17th.
Thank you, Chairman. How do you like that? Representative Johnson moves approval of the minutes of January 12th and January 17th. Any comments? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. Representative Lucero, do you have some business?
Everyone will be fine.
She left it. Representative Lucero. Yeah.
Say yes.
Please take your seat.
Yeah.
Thank you. We have before us one bill today, House File 3. We have the chief author, Representative Smith, with us. Representative Howe, would you like to move the bill?
My pleasure, Mr. Chair. I'll move House File 113 to be... it's just House File 3.
The wrong number.
All right, I got the wrong number. I'll move House File 3, Mr. Chair.
And the destination is Ways and Means. Would you like to make that a part of your motion?
Yes, I would.
Thank you.
To move it to House Ways and Means.
Thank you, Representative Powell, for that motion. Representative Smith, go ahead with the presentation of your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House File 3 deals with Real ID. This bill offers two tracks. You can opt into the Real ID system if you'd like to, or you can keep the same license that you have as well. The cost in this bill is $60,000, $30,000 programming in year one and in year two. There's going to be the effective date of the end of this year, so implementation will start on January 1st, 2018. This bill offers consumers in Minnesota a choice. The time frame has brought upon us where we really need to move upon this bill this session. We're out of extensions from the Department of Homeland Security. And this bill addresses that issue by having implementation starting within 1 year. And then we're hopeful to, and we expect to receive an extension from the Department of Homeland Security, and that will allow the issuance of licenses up until October of 2020. And, Mr. Chair, I have an author's amendment as well.
So, Representative Smith, you have a copy of the amendment before you?
I do, Mr. Chair.
And what is the number?
A9.
Thank you. I will move the A9 amendment to put the bill in the shape the author would like. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. Thank you. We now have the amended bill before us. Representative Smith, perhaps you should explain the amendment.
Yes, the amendment provides some technical changes, Mr. Chair, members. Also provides clarification on the idea that the Real ID license that you may opt into or the traditional license that you may opt into, the pricing is going to be the same between the two of them. Those are the primary changes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other remarks about the bill you'd like to make at this time? Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, no.
At this time, I'm prepared to take questions from members. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one of the things that I noticed is that the fiscal note has a little bit higher cost than what you have, Representative Smith. Do you know the purpose for that? Do you know, or maybe the department or somebody else can give us an answer to that?
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Representative Petersburg brings up the fiscal note, and perhaps we should review that first, before you try to answer his question. Representative Smith, would you like to go over the fiscal note with us?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. And if I could have staff assist with that, that would be outstanding.
Mr. Lee has some important information he would like to share with the committee.
Mr. Chair and members, the fiscal note is in your packet for House File 3. You will see on the first page a summary of the expense to the Special Revenue Fund, that is the Driver Services Operating Fund. On the second and third page, there's a little bit more detail of how some of these costs are expended. The large cost that you see in fiscal 2021 is mostly a result of a provision that allows for free license renewals in the time period for the implementation of Real ID. You'll see a few smaller costs on page three that are itemized at the top, and also the second paragraph in the expenditure and revenue formula. I have some quick comments to make on those smaller costs, the printing renewal costs, and mailing costs. With the adopted amendment that moves the implementation back from January to October of 2018, that's in the amendment on line 4.15. Most of these costs, and just conferring with the agency before hearing, would go away. However, the larger costs that you can see outlined in the first paragraph under expenditure and revenue formula would still remain. That would be the costs of the free license renewals.
Thank you, Mr. Lee, for that information. I realize this information is fairly fresh. Representative Smith, would you like to make any comments on the fiscal note?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I did receive this note just literally minutes before arrival here today. But one comment about the the department suggested or told us in writing that the cost was going to be between $15,000 and $30,000 per year for the programming costs. This was from May of 2016. So we used the $30,000, used the higher of the two numbers, to put into the bill. So now they're saying it's going to be $92,000 as opposed to the $60,000. That additional $32,000, I don't anticipate to be problematic. There is significant funds in the special revenue to cover this. That would have been my only comment at this point.
Thank you. We have a question from Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And looking at the amendment, Representative Smith, currently, if you want to get an enhanced driver's license, you pay extra for that. And I heard you say that the Real ID, the new license, is going to be the same cost as the current licenses are. So that in effect would be replacing the enhanced driver's license. Why are we now charging more again for the enhanced driver's license? Because if you have the Real ID, wouldn't need the enhanced driver's license, or am I missing something here?
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative, good question. The this bill does not deal with the EDL or the enhanced driver's license, so the pricing of that is really up to the department for them to set. The enhanced driver's license has a specific purpose, which is included some, but also different as well as to what the Real ID will serve. So it's unique in that sense. In regard to this bill dealing with a Real ID and a non-compliant ID, I think it's important. I anticipate the Real ID to be very popular within our state. The department is going to talk about the estimations that they feel the number of people will sign up for it when they testify shortly. So when we're giving consumers a choice, I think it's important to have parity in pricing. So they get to choose as to what best fits their life or what they want to do. And having the same pricing will allow that to, to really give them a true choice and not sway them one way or the other.
A follow-up, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess it doesn't get at my question. The question of why, I guess, what's that much different between the new Real ID and the enhanced driver's license, and why if I can get the Real ID, which is going to accomplish most of the same things, that I need to pay $15 more for the enhanced one. I guess that's just still can't figure that out, but I'll let it go at that.
Well, I think, Representative Nelson, that we can, perhaps Representative Smith can give us some more details about the differences between the enhanced driver's license and Real ID.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative, the enhanced driver's license has a chip in it, which adds to the cost. Also, there's 13 centers in our state where you can receive an enhanced driver's license of only 13 as opposed to the hundreds for a traditional license or a real ID license. So I think those are two main elements for the cost difference.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Representative Petersburg has a follow-up to his earlier question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Lee, this is a follow-up question for you in regards to some of the discussions that you had about the changes in the fiscal note. And one of the things I heard you say was that going into with the later date that we have listed on here, that some of these costs would be eliminated. Do you have a figure on what those changes would be by going to a later enactment or a start date?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Petersburg, I actually need to correct myself in conferring with Mr. Burris. The cost savings was not from the change date. It was actually from the lines in the amendment, lines 3.10 down to about 3.22. Basically allows the agency to send out the renewal notices as part of their standard, 3.10 to 3.18. As part of their standard mailing, so rather than having to do an additional mailing, it would just be part of what they already do, and that's what saves the costs in fiscal years 19 through 2020 and part of 2021. So it is essentially the costs that are outlined on the second paragraph under expenditure and revenue formula on page 3 would largely be eliminated.
Thank you, Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair?
So you're referring to lines on the A9 amendment, is that correct?
Mr. Chair and members, that's correct.
Thank you, just to make sure everybody's on the right page. Another follow-up, Representative Peters.
So I'm clear. So the change in the date really isn't going to impact, as far as you know, any kind of savings, much like we've seen from last year to this year's delay in implementing this. Is that what your understanding is, Mr. Lee?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Petersburg, from my understanding, no, it doesn't have to do with the date change.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have a question from Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Smith, I'm getting a number of questions about what is the real difference between a non-compliance license and the real ID. Can you give a quick summary, since we do have a lot of cameras here?
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative, in regard to the use of it?
What is the difference? That is the message that's not getting out, is what is a real ID?
Okay. Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative, certainly. So the difference with the real ID, you will be able to board a commercial aircraft with just that license. You will be able to get into government buildings that require identification with just that license. You'll be able to get into military facilities with just that license. Also, you'll be able to gain entrance into certain power plants with just that license. With a non-compliant license, as we're calling it in this bill, which is the same as the license that you have today, or presumably you have today in your pocket, you would not be able to get on an airplane. You would not be able to get into a military facility, a power plant, or a government building. That will allow you to drive.
A follow-up, Representative Mason?
Just one. This is a very controversial bill, so the question is, what is making the Real ID so controversial?
Representative
Smith.
Representative Smith, in 100 words or less.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't believe this bill is controversial because there is... we're not changing what happens to the non-compliant license today or tomorrow. I think specifically you're asking about undocumented workers and how that would impact them. And this bill does not impact them at all. The process for an undocumented worker getting a license today, the reasons why they're not going to be able to get a license, is exactly the same as to once the Real ID bill becomes law, if it becomes law. So Wisconsin offered consumers a choice, a Real ID compliant opt-in and a non-compliant license. It was done with minimal controversy. It's been widely accepted. And this bill is very similar to that in that regard. So I don't believe there's controversy when you look at this bill simply within the Real ID lens. If you're trying to make this bill something else, which is what I think some people are doing, then perhaps there could be some controversy, if you want to call it that.
Okay. Just one follow-up.
Representative Mason?
I guess the point I'm trying to make is, because I am getting questions, it's not clear what it is, the real ID is, and why would anybody be opposed to it?
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't think anyone should be opposed to it. This bill offers an option to Minnesotans. If you want to have a real ID, you can get one. If you don't want one, you don't have to get one. There's a cost savings for getting the real ID, because if you want to travel on an airplane or go to the military base or a federal building, etc., you need to have a passport with you in addition to your non-compliant license. Passports can cost up to $150. If a family of four wants to go to Disney World over spring break or over the summer break, that's an additional $600 for that family to go to Florida. There's an economic argument about having a real ID. If someone chooses to. If they choose not to, they don't have to.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I have no other questions. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the part that you have, brought up the topic of people that are undocumented immigrants in Minnesota, and the language that you have in the bill, can you remove that? If that language was removed, would we be compliant with Real ID?
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, it would be. And I think that it's important to talk about why that language is in the bill and why I think it's important. This bill, I think, should be dealing strictly with the Real ID issue. So we're not one of three states. 47 other states have moved forward on this issue. And Minnesota is one of three that has not. And the issue about undocumented workers receiving a driver's license, that's something that I think should require a separate action by this legislature. And by placing the rulemaking into statute, which is what your question speaks to, ensures that any action on that idea is done by this legislature.
Follow-up, Representative Bernardi.
Well, Mr. Chair, I got a little distracted there when someone was trying to get through. But so it is clear that we don't need that language to get Real ID passed in Minnesota. So and there's bipartisan support with that. So putting that language in there creates gridlock. And so would you – well, we'll talk about that when we have an amendment coming up. But Minnesotans had driver's license until 2003, and that's been a tradition in our state. And so I think we need to pass a bill and you take out the part 6.25, and that we actually get a bill passed with Real ID that has bipartisan support from both parties. And we do have that conversation that you're talking about, so it should not be included in this bill. So are you we need to move forward with a recommendation to remove it. So I wanted to ask you, would you be willing to do that?
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative, are you speaking to the amendment? Presenting an amendment now?
We can wait until that. When are we going to bring up the amendment?
My intention is to consider the amendment after we've heard from testifiers.
Okay, so we'll wait for that, but it is clear that we do not need 6.25 addressing undocumented immigrants in this bill to pass Real ID in Minnesota and get it done now and move on with our work.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative, point of clarification. The section of 6.25 that deals with lawful status in regard to Real ID is necessary for Real ID. The other portion is ensuring that any action on this issue is done by the legislature, which I think all 201 legislatures that work at our Capitol would agree that an issue that is that important should have a separate legislative act, and the legislature should determine that as opposed to the governor's office.
One more follow-up, Representative Bernardi.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I heard two conflicting comments. If we pass Real ID for Tier 1 and Tier 2, and you didn't have that language in there about undocumented immigrants, we would have a Real ID that would make us compliant and people would be able to get them and go on their way, and we could get this done right away.
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative, this bill obviously is very technical, so I'm trying to give an honest answer here that addresses the issue. Lawful status is a requirement for a federal real ID. So that part of that section would need to be required for real ID. The other part ensures that if there's a change for, if undocumented people are going to receive a license, it ensures that the legislature is going to make that happen and not the governor's office.
Mr. Chair, I'll just ask a yes or no question.
Very quickly.
Okay, thank you. So does that language need, that you were just discussing, does that language need to be in the bill to pass real ID? And
Representative Smith, a yes or no answer?
Yes.
Thank you. Representative Sundin.
Thank you. I was going to wait, but I think I can get going on this. If you'll indulge me for a moment here, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to give the committee a little bit of a history lesson. About 120 years ago, a fellow by the name of Eric Sundin came to Minnesota from Sweden, and he didn't know the language, and he fumbled around. He actually found a piece of land in the state of Minnesota, gave him 160 acres, and he got started. Let's turn the page up to 2003, when we were involved in a war in Iraq. On March 21st, 2003, Marine Lance Corporal Jose Gutierrez, 22 years old, of Lomita, California, became the first combat casualty of the war in Iraq. Gutierrez was assigned to the 2nd Battalion, 1st Marine Regiment of the 1st Marine Division at Camp Pendleton, California. He was killed in action in southern Iraq. This is story is what America is all about. Gutierrez was an orphan on the streets of Guatemala City, where he learned about America from the minister at a children's shelter. At 14, he made his way to California by hopping freight trains and walking. After being raised in California foster homes, Gutierrez joined the Marines to make money for college and to send for his sister in Guatemala. He didn't achieve any of those goals. He was killed in service to the United States. I find it remarkable that in the last 120 years, Minnesota has changed its attitude so much towards newcomers to the state, where we used to give them 160 acres and a good start, and now we can't give them a goddamn little piece of plastic.
Thank you, Representative. I did not hear a question in there. At this point, I think we're prepared to move on to a list of testifiers. The first on my list is John Keller, Executive Director of the Immigrant Law Center of Minnesota. I would just add that we have a rather long list of testifiers, and I will use my discretion on the length of testimony, so your expediency is appreciated.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Keller. I'm the Executive Director of the Immigrant Law Center, and the Immigrant Law Center is the state's largest provider of legal services to immigrants and refugees all over the state. We have five offices, three in Greater Minnesota, one in Worthington, Austin, and in Moorhead. We primarily work on immigration legal matters, so people who are working to move from a green card to citizenship or from undocumented to getting status if the federal law permits. We also work on education and public policy issues. I'm here to testify as it relates to the immigration consequences of the bill as written. It's my office's position that 6.25 and the inclusion of 6.25 for all types of licenses created by this bill is unnecessary. What that means is, I think the last exchange from my vantage point was telling that both Representative Smith and Representative Bernardi were correct. What I mean by that is, I think this is a complex topic, and the need to be clear what we're talking about and responding to will help, I think, the committee move along. First and foremost, what the bill is intending to do, and we're in agreement with this intent by Representative Smith, is to create a type of license for people who do not want to comply with Real ID. They do not want to comply with the federal level. These tend to be a stream of people who believe that the federal government has too much intrusion into our lives, and that this bill allows that to happen. The other portion of the bill says if you want a Real ID compliant license, if your license is one that you want to use for a plane, as Representative Smith has testified, then you must include proof of lawful status in that Real ID compliant license. But you shouldn't mix the two together. the non-compliant license can still be approved and is contemplated under the federal Real ID statute. So you can do both things. Our position is what's happening, if this bill were to be approved as written, is that we're moving the position in the state of Minnesota from a prohibition in the rules as it's existed since 2003 for this unauthorized immigrants to the statute. What we've worked on for many years, and many people in the room have worked on, is to pass a standalone bill for unauthorized immigrant workers in Minnesota. 95,000 people, this is the state demographer's estimate, live in Minnesota who cannot obtain federal immigration status. Many of them come through our office, and we turn them away. We are working and have worked with a broad range of coalition partners, including members of the business community, for the last 10 years to fix this issue in Washington. By passing a Real ID compliant bill today that leaves immigration status out of this bill, you're not voting to create a driver's license for the undocumented. You're simply leaving it where it is. You're leaving the prohibition on driving for the unauthorized in rules. My office has worked with leaders from both parties on a standalone bill, and I think that's where we can bifurcate this conversation. Let's have a conversation about the public safety benefits of passing a limited driving privilege only for those persons of age who can't prove immigration status. Let's also work towards fixing our broken immigration system in Washington. You certainly will see a wide variety of stakeholders who've been working on that for years. I just want to, in trying to be brief, sum up some of the benefits in that other debate, if we could bifurcate this debate. What we found and what research shows is that by creating a driver's license for the undocumented community, you will find a reduction in the percentage of drivers on the road who are uninsured, so we'll reduce the uninsured driving rate. You'll also logically reduce the cost of insurance for all Minnesotans. And one of the ways that you do that is by reducing the number of hit-and-run accidents and also forcing people to be tested to secure their licenses and to obtain auto insurance. But that's the debate for another time. What I'd like to add in closing is that in the last 2 to 3 years, 11 states have opted, most of them through the Real ID statute at the federal level, to create a compliant license for the unauthorized immigrants in their states. There are now 14 states and territories that allow that. 11 of them have done it in the last 2 to 3 years, and the vast majority of the legislation that's been passed has also been compliant with Real ID. So all things can be done. I look forward to working with members of both parties to try to advance that separate conversation and hope that you'll endorse the amendment that's coming up to remove the prohibition on unauthorized drivers from all of the license types contemplated in Representative Smith's bill.
Thank Happy you to take your any testimony, questions. Mr. Keller. Representative Johnson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Counselor, when you talk about unauthorized immigrants, are you included in that set people who came here as a small child and now have probably been raised in Minnesota?
Mr. Keller.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the total of 95,000 estimate by the Minnesota State Demographer's Office includes people of all ages and different ages at which they arrived. I think what you're getting at is currently in Minnesota, there are approximately 6,000 young people who have lawful status under a program created by President Obama referred to as DACA. Those 6,000 young people have temporary lawful immigration status today. That program's existed for the last almost 5 years. Our office has helped almost 3,000 individuals with that process or with the renewal of it. So they're lawfully here, but their status is in jeopardy with the incoming transition. So they could, should President-elect Trump remove that special protection, also be unable to secure a driver's license. Currently, they can get a Minnesota driver's license.
Thank you. I do not see any more questions for you, Mr. Keller. Thank you for your testimony. Darren Macbeth from the Minnesota Milk Producers is next. And just so we're ready to roll, Bentley Graves from the Chamber will be after Darren. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Darren Macbeth. I'm with Great Plant Moody Law Firm and here representing the Minnesota Milk Producers Association and the Midwest Food Products Association. These two organizations are part of the Minnesota Business Immigration Coalition that also includes the Minnesota Chamber and Hospitality Minnesota, the Agri-Growth Council, and the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association. And these organizations have come together over 10 years ago with aligned interest in federal and state immigration policy. Minnesota dairy farm businesses and food processors are hopeful to have the state of Minnesota authorize residents, including undocumented immigrants, with the ability to obtain a provisional driver's license after appropriate identification, insurance, and training, or passing an exam, or whatever the state would deem appropriate for safe roads. Many foreign-born or otherwise undocumented immigrants, some call aliens, live in small rural towns and seek work at dairy farms and food processing plants in greater Minnesota. They're good workers. It's hard work. Other local citizens don't sometimes choose to avail themselves of that work or be employed there. And many times these jobs are filled or of interest to undocumented workers who do need to drive there from wherever they live. We, at the same time, respect the urgency and the importance of complying with Real ID and getting that done and don't want to stand in the way of that. Also, as John Keller alluded to, we do want to give a voice not only to our position on this, but to perhaps looking at a standalone piece of legislation or whatever is necessary for an explicit authorization of provisional driver's licenses for people in this situation. So thanks for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Macbeth. I do not see any questions for you. Thank you for your testimony. Bentley Graves. After Bentley, Jeff Davidman from Delta would be next. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bentley Graves. I'm the Director of Healthcare and Transportation Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Just to kind of level set here quickly, the Chamber is has 2,300 members around the state, all types of businesses, all sizes of businesses, all corners of the state. And the issue of bringing the state into compliance with Real ID is an important one for a number of our members. Many of our members require their employees to have access to fish and air travel to conduct business, and that would become much more difficult if they were not able to use their Minnesota driver's license to board federally regulated flights. And while that is certainly a concern for about a year out from now, many of our other members are already having issues with their employees' inability to access federal sites. You heard Representative Smith list off the places that Minnesotans can no longer go with a federal or with a Minnesota driver's license, those being federal facilities, military facilities, and various secure sites. So this is something that we worked on very hard last year. We're extremely disappointed that the legislature wasn't able to find a way forward to bring Minnesota into compliance last session. The clock is ticking now. We have just about a year to begin the process of becoming compliant. Otherwise, I think our members would maintain that there would be some serious impacts to commerce, and that's something that we want to avoid. So we appreciate the quick work of the House and this body and Representative Smith in bringing this legislation forward. Look forward to working with him and other stakeholders to get a bill passed this session and make sure that we're able to bring Minnesota compliance and make sure that we get this done this session. Happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. I believe Representative Hausman has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if you were in the room when Mr. Keller was testifying. Did that make sense to you, what he was suggesting, that if that one problematic piece was out, we're all ready to move ahead and that it's really not necessary? Did his argument make sense to you?
Mr. Graves.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, as I think you have a copy of a letter from the Minnesota Immigration Business Coalition, of which the Minnesota Chamber is a part. We've long supported the idea of legislation to ensure that undocumented immigrants here in Minnesota have the ability to drive with a driver's license. We have also suggested that that ought to move on its own and stand on its own merits. We believe that it certainly can, given some of the data points that Mr. Keller offered. At the same time, we believe that that's something that ought to be dealt with affirmatively by the legislature. Right now, that prohibition sits in regulation. We believe that whether that prohibition sits in regulation or sits in statute, it's something that the legislature needs to affirmatively deal with. And the biggest reason for that is to make sure that both the folks who would hopefully get licenses under a granting of that authority from the legislature would have certainty that those licenses wouldn't be taken away by whim of administration, but also that the businesses for whom they work have certainty in the same way. So, you know, our position is that this is something that needs to be affirmatively granted by the legislature, by legislative action. And that's a position that, frankly, doesn't change whether that's addressing something in rule or in statute.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. I do not, I'm sorry, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. Mr. Graves, you and previously, Mr. Keller also admitted that businesses are hiring undocumented individuals for hiring, and I thought that was against the law, that there was actually a prohibition against that. How do we rectify that portion of blatant not following of law? Because that seems to be one of the big sticklers that we're also dealing with here.
Mr. Graves.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's one of the reasons why, despite the fact that we're, frankly, a state organization, this is one issue that we have expended significant energy at the federal level, because ultimately this is an issue that needs to be fixed at the federal level to ensure that we have a comprehensive system for dealing with folks who are here in an undocumented fashion, but also to make sure that businesses, not just in Minnesota but across the country, have access to the labor that they need. So while this particular piece of it is something that, you know, can and we think should be before the legislature, the larger question we do believe should be dealt with at the federal level and dealt with in an expeditious way. And that's a position that we've also had for some time and have been very involved and very engaged at the federal level to see to that.
A follow-up for Representative Petersburg.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Graves. And that's kind of the dilemma I'm having, too. I'm not against immigration because I think that is the strength of who we are and the work ethic of it. But I'm stuck between the requirements that I follow the law of federal government as well as the state government and within that. And this seems like we're trying to usurp that without really dealing with it. And I agree with everybody else. It needs to be brought up. We need to deal with it individually. And my question is whether 2.51 or whatever is in the bill or not, we are still required to provide lawful status for those getting this real ID compliant license. And it seems to me it's more prudent for this body to have a jurisdiction over it than allow a rulemaking to occur in which any particular administration or commissioner can make those changes to rule, usurping the responsibility of this legislature. So if you have any comment on that, then I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Mr. Bent.
Mr. Chairman, I would just reiterate my earlier comments, and that is that, you know, whether this prohibition sits in rule or sits in statute, you know, our view is that it is something that should be affirmatively dealt with by the legislature to ensure that all involved have certainty about what the policy of the state of Minnesota is and will be.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. Next, we have Jeff Davidman from Delta Airlines, followed by Mitch Killian from the MAC. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Jeff Davidman with Delta Airlines. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today and to testify. As most of you know, Delta is the largest carrier in the state of Minnesota. At MSP, we provide over 400 flights a day to over 150 destinations, including 27 international. In addition to our operations at MSP, we also serve Rochester. Either Delta or our partners serve Rochester, Duluth, International Falls, Brainerd, Bemidji, Hibbing airports as well on a daily basis. We are supportive of the state of Minnesota passing legislation during the 2017 session that will allow us to come into compliance with the federal Real ID requirements in order to ensure that residents can continue to use their Minnesota driver's licenses when boarding commercial aircraft. There's already a lot of confusion that we're hearing on a day-to-day basis among our customers, both those who travel frequently as well as those who fly once or twice a year. And this confusion only grows more and more as we get closer to the January 2018 deadline. We're hearing from customers both in our corporate travel, our corporate sales department hears from corporate travel managers. We're also hearing from individuals asking what do they need to do to be able to fly in 2018. And as I said, it just gets more and more confusing as we get closer to the deadline. If you flew over the holidays, you probably saw that TSA has now put up signs at the security lines that indicate you will need a Real ID compliant driver's license, and that as people are traveling, that just raises more and more questions. At Delta, we've seen, you know, firsthand the impact that these types of issues can have on our customers at MSP. And it doesn't happen frequently, but just to give you an example, when people are traveling overseas and they have a passport that is current, they look at it and say, I've got 4 or 5 months left on my passport, I'm only going on a 2-week trip, it should be fine, I'll renew my passport when I get back. What they find out when they arrive at the airport is that the country they're flying to has a provision that says we won't allow people into our country if their passport expires within 6 months of their travel date. They didn't know it ahead of time. They didn't. It's not their fault. It's tough to find out that information for where you're traveling to. But the result is they're not able to board the aircraft that day. They have to go figure out a way to renew their passport. Their travel is delayed 2 or 3 days or maybe even longer before they can go on their journey. It's just a small example to show what we think could become more and more frequent if we're not able to find a solution and bring our driver's licenses into Real ID compliance. We think customers will show up next year and not knowing about the deadline, try and board an aircraft and only be told when they get to the airport they're not able to do so, their journey will be delayed, and our customers will become frustrated. Another concern just to raise is those who maybe will travel next year. If January 22nd is the deadline, those who might travel on January 18th will be able to use a Minnesota driver's license, but when they want to return on January 25th or 26th, that license from their destination won't allow them to get on an aircraft, and they'll be stuck at the destination that they traveled to. So, again, we're here just to encourage to try and find a solution to this issue in Minnesota in order to make sure that Minnesota driver's licenses become compliant with the federal Real ID requirements. And with that, I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. David. And I'm trying to decide where I would like to be stuck on the. I have a number of choices.
Antarctica. Over 150 direct from here. I can send you a list.
I won't charge you a fee for that. I don't see any questions for you, Mr. David. Thank you for your testimony. Next is Mitch Killian from the Metropolitan Airports Commission, followed by Gloria Stock Mickelson, Director of the American Society of Travel Agents. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Chairman Torkelson, my name is Mitch Killian. I'm the Director of Governmental Affairs with the Metropolitan Airports Commission. I think that Mr. Davidman laid out a pretty good case, but a couple of additional items I would add is that, to paraphrase, when you created the Metropolitan Airports Commission, you created us to help air aviation grow and prosper. Well, this issue, if it really comes true next spring, is not going to help us with our mission at all. We have a serious issue here, and it's impacting us today as well as the possibility of in the future. And I'll give you a couple of examples. One of our largest growth areas right now is over in T2, the Humphrey Terminal, and that's airlines like Spirit and the ultra-low-cost carriers. What those carriers have been doing is not just stealing away from our existing carriers as they bring in their operation. They're actually creating a new market. You're actually seeing those carriers take away from like Greyhound or people that are driving in many cases. And those people that are the new customers that are coming into aviation and testing the market with these ultra-low-cost carriers, they don't like all this confusion, the security line issues that we have and all the different confusion pieces. And when they see those big bad signs that say, you're going to need this special ID, it just adds to the confusion of whether or not they even want to travel at all. And so it's impacting us today with our travelers and with the market that we're kind of seeing out there. Also, the Airports Commission is continuously out recruiting new air service from carriers that are already out there today to add to new markets or new carriers completely like JetBlue. So when we're out and we have an air service guy that's out pitching to JetBlue to maybe start new service, they have many issues that they're kind of considering. And this issue of Real ID is one of them. if you were an airline that might start service, and they usually announce it 6 to 9 months in advance, and if you were a new carrier that might start new service in January, would you put an airplane into this market with this risk over your head? And so you're kind of hamstringing us as we're out trying to bring in new air service, and that's the mission that you've given us out there. And so it's an ongoing issue for us today as well as the big impact come January of next year. The other issue that we just want to mention is I've heard as talking to people, some people say the federal government is going to extend this again, so maybe we have time. Well, we have two really reputable trade associations in Washington, D.C. that have been watching this issue from when it was first created by the federal government, and there's no movement on it out there. There's not any bills introduced. There's not some committee looking at it, and there hasn't been an indication from the administration that they're going to change this deadline. And so I think we need to act as if this is a real deadline that's going to happen and not kind of be saying, well, they might move the deadline so we can leave this hang. So we really are thankful that the committee's hearing this and trying to keep this bill moving, and we're thankful that Representative Smith has brought it forward today. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Killian. I do not have any questions for you. Oh, Representative Gaskowski has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Killian, you mentioned there haven't been any bills introduced in Congress. Are you familiar with the bill that the Montana delegation introduced to repeal Real ID?
Mr. Killian.
Representative Draxkowski and Chairman. Well, there have been bills in the past introduced, but there's nothing new moving today, like in the new administration or something happening as far as real discussion. Have there been? We were part of coalitions originally to say, boy, this is going to be a problem. When our state legislature passed a bill that said we won't even study the issue, we were part of those coalitions and saying, boy, the feds need to fix this. And so there was lots of movement and bills over time and things. But as far as bills moving today, there's not any hearings. There's not any scheduled plans for discussions about this issue today.
Follow-up, Representative Gaskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Killian, you might want to look again, because just within the last couple of weeks, the Montana delegation of Congress has introduced a bill.
Thank you, Representative. Any other? I do not see any other questions for you, Mr. Killian. Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Gloria Stock Mickelson, Director of the American Society of Travel Agents, followed by Twyla Brace, President of Citizen Council for Health Reform. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Gloria Stock Mickelson, and today I'm representing the American Society of Travel Agents, specifically our travel agents here in the state of Minnesota. I'm past president of the Minnesota chapter, and I now sit on the National Board of Directors for this organization. In our state, we have 319 retail travel agencies. In addition, we have approximately 800 independent contractors that are all selling travel, business and leisure, and many to Minnesota people. Our travel agencies have a very vested interest in this issue. We know that January 22, 2018, our travelers who have a driver's license right now will not be able to board an airplane, as we've been told by the other testimony. It puts us in a difficult situation. We have travelers right now that are planning for 2018. We service some of the colleges and their organization of athletes who travel every spring. The coach is wondering what to do for spring 2018. Does he take his 70 baseball players, some from Minnesota, some from not? How does he handle it? He wants to book it now. We have another example that hit our travel agency, a multi-generational family. Grandma and grandpa want to take the whole extended family to Florida, June of 2018. Only two of them are carrying U.S. passports right now. Do they book? Do they not book? Those are hitting our agencies every single day here in Minnesota. And we know our travelers do not have what they might need, the U.S. passport, the passport card. There are trusted traveler cards like Global Entry, permanent resident cards. Those are the things we will have to coach our travelers to have in January if we don't figure out Real ID. As smart travel professionals like all of our people are, we're coaching our people. We're recommending passports. We're trying to talk to them, but they're just uncertain about booking for 2018. So I do encourage you on the part of all Minnesota travel professionals that I work with to take action on Real ID for us.
Thank you, Ms. Stock-Mickelson. I do not see any questions for you. Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Twyla Brace, President of Citizens Council for Health Freedom, followed by Jim Hurst, Minnesota Deputy Registrar's Association. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Twyla Braze. I'm president of Citizens Council for Health Freedom. And I know this is a financial committee, and we have certain things that we want to say about the money that we believe may have been being spent while the state was under a prohibition for planning and for implementation. But there are several things that have been stated here that I at least want to clear the record for how we view it versus how, what was stated up here. So Representative May, is it Messine?
Mason.
Representative Mason wanted to know why the bill was controversial. Representative Smith said it shouldn't be because we're not changing what happens to the noncompliant license. So I just want to be very clear that there are two licenses. The Federal ID Act says exactly what has to happen to the so-called noncompliant, which is not really noncompliant because obviously it's under the law too. And so it's actually going to be changed. It has to be a different color. It has to say not for federal purposes, which means, of course, it is a more limited license than you have in your pocket today. In addition to that, I would like to say that it has been set up here that there are only three states that are not compliant. We're one of three. There's actually 25, all the yellow and the red, that are not compliant. The ones that are in the red are the ones that are not compliant and don't have an extension. The ones that are in the yellow are not compliant and have an extension either until June or October of this year. Another point is Wisconsin. So we looked up the statistics between 2013 and 2015. Only 20% of the population decided that it was going to take an ID. Everybody else decided to go for the not for federal purposes ID. In addition, somebody up here said we should consider this the last deadline. In 2012, the department said that was the last deadline in 2013. We have an article from the Homeland Security publication. But, of course, we've had several deadlines come and go since then. And, of course, the reason there is because the federal government cannot commandeer the state. They cannot force the government to do this here in Minnesota. Only if Minnesota incorporates the federal law into its state statute will Minnesota then move forward with allowing the commandeering by the federal government. So we believe that there are several things here. The other thing that was said was the federal change piece. So this is really important to understand because the federal law says that the Secretary of Homeland Security can unilaterally change the law, can unilaterally change official purposes of the four federal purposes ID that will likely have the gold star on it. And that means that they don't have to go back to Congress. And in the rules, they say that they don't have to go back to Congress to decide. So they could decide that for purchase of ammunition, for purchase of guns, for staying at a hotel, for getting access to health care, for anything they want, even for driving. They could actually take away the so-called non-compliant, not for federal purposes ID and choose to do that. They could add biometrics. In 2012, they decided they weren't going to add biometrics. But they knew that they had the authority to do so. So your fingerprint or your DNA or whatever you want to, they decide that has to be put on the for federal purposes or the not for federal purposes ID. So those are all things that we want to do to understand about what has been said here that we just have a different take on it. We do believe it is terribly controversial because it is a violation of the 10th Amendment to allow the federal government to commandeer the identification and therefore the control the movement and the access to services in this state. Now, just regarding the money, so we have a handout for you that just shows you that, so we're concerned about the $30,000. And the $30,000, we thought, why is that possible? Because last year it was up to $5.1 million. How is that possible? Now, looking at the fiscal note, we see that come 2020, if I read this correctly, the cost will be not $92,000, but $283,000, and in 2021, $28 million, if I read that correctly. But the other thing that we're concerned about is the money that we believe has been received by, and used in the state of Minnesota all the time while the state has been under a prohibition for planning or implementing Real ID. And perhaps you recall last year when you tried to get the department to come, or at least several committees tried to get the department to come, and they said they wouldn't come because it was a prohibition on planning. And yet, if you look at the handout that we're passing you, that is being passed out to you, you'll see this map. And this map shows that Minnesota has received three Real ID grants between 2008 and 2011. If you go to the next page, it talks about that money for a 2011 Department of Homeland Security Driver's License Security Grant Program. And if you go to the back of it, you see that Minnesota received $829,473 in 2011. We still have a prohibition on implementation, and only in 2016 did we take away the prohibition on planning. So one of our concerns, Mr. Chair, is that we have a department who, going outside of our law, which has a prohibition on both planning and implementation until last year when the planning was repealed. That's our concern, and we would like the department at least to be able to explain to you. We did try to get some documents from the department before this legislative session ever began, and I think we started maybe in September. Maybe it was August, but we haven't been able to get anything yet. So we wanted to bring our concerns, and the last thing that I wanted to say was there's a cost to the residents. There's a cost of going to get your Social Security card if you don't have one. There's a cost of going to get your birth certificate from the county if you don't have one. And those kind of costs, as well as the cost perhaps of a breach, because the Department of Homeland Security in their privacy report says that they find the data in the Real ID Hub to be sensitive security information, and they recommend that states prepare for a breach. We also know that there are costs for hookups. Anytime the state hooks up to the hub, that's got to be a cost, as well as anytime the state pings for information on somebody going after a license. We know there are costs. And so we just think that this is an incomplete picture in this bill of what the cost will be for the states and for the residents. And the hub, by the way, is in the state of Virginia under a contract with the state of Mississippi. And it's AMBA has it, and there's a 2,250-page document of data and exchange specifications, and they are all on the back page of what we gave you, including the list of data that has to be submitted to the hub on every person who applies for a license. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. I do not have any questions for you. Next up is...
Mr. Chair, may I just say, I'm sorry, Montana bill... Senate 126 to repeal ID in Congress.
Thank you for that. Did you want to make some comments, Ms. Representative Smith? I'm trying to read your body language.
Mr. Chair, no, thank you.
All right. Moving ahead then, Jim Hurst is next from the Minnesota Deputy Registrar's Association, followed by Lars Negstad, Policy Director of ISAO. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. For the record, my name is Jim Hurst. I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Deputy Registrar's Association. Some of you may already know, but those who are new to the committee, deputy registrars in the state act as agents of the state. They are appointed by the Commissioner of Public Safety, and they are regulated by that department's Division of Driver and Vehicle Services. In general, Mr. Chairman, one of the things I want to point out to the committee and certainly to our regulators is that as Real ID becomes real, in advance we desperately need training so that all of our agents know exactly what is expected of them. Furthermore, deputy registrars, there are 174 offices across the state, and acting as a deputy registrar, they are also named as a driver's license agent. So looking forward, we know that we will be anticipating some costs. At this point, we can't tell you what those costs are, and it would be disingenuous of us to try to identify a number. But in general, we know that there's going to be background checks on every individual who is involved with the transaction at a deputy registrar office. Now, the fiscal note identifies that cost at about $20 per person. I have problems with that number because in discussions with the department just at the end of last session, that was the fee that they are charged when they go and have their employees' background checked by the BCA. I suspect for non-state employees, it could be closer to $30. However, in addition to that, I was informed that not only is it required that a BCA check be done, but I believe the Department of Homeland Security going and working with the FBI also requires an additional check. So that means another potentially $20 to $30 per person. In larger offices where you have a dozen or so individuals that are subject to this, that counts up, that adds up to real money. And furthermore, it is suggested in here that this would be an ongoing annual background check. It isn't one and done. But that's up to the discretion of the department, so I don't know how that's going to be interpreted as far as costs going forward on that. We will certainly be responsible for doing more scanning, more photocopying of documents that are brought forward to us. That will also require us to do some more filing of sensitive documents, which is not new to us, but it does take up more space, more time. We have a separate bill to deal with storage, but I won't get into that at this point. And bottom line, we probably will maybe need some additional staff to take on all of this. However, those costs are going to pale in comparison when you just look at the fiscal impact on this, because there's a local fiscal impact that is somewhere around $7.5 million. $7.5 million is a huge hit to the deputy registrar system. 174 offices, of which two-thirds of those offices are public offices, meaning they're run by city or county government. When the income doesn't cover the cost, that means two things. Either you start to cut staff. By law, we can't cut hours. We're mandated to be open at least 40 hours a week. So that means you have to cut staff, which isn't good for customer service. Or the local units of government will unfortunately have to do what has happened in the past, in which case they have to take from property tax rolls to subsidize an office that should be self-sufficient. You also have one-third of these offices that are run by private individuals. They don't have that type of backup so that they can go to a local government unit to be subsidized for this. I know the fiscal note is a suggestion, but even if it's twice what it really is, it's still a huge amount of money. I would strongly suggest that this committee reconsider the section of the proposed bill pertaining to the ban on assessments and everything, and allow the deputy registrars to at least continue to collect just that $8 filing fee, which is critical for keeping their doors open, because a hit of this amount is just, it cannot be sustained, and it will force some offices, quite honestly, to shut their doors if it's that bad of a loss. We stand ready to work with the chair, with this committee, and certainly with the author. I don't mean to put a wet blanket on this, but this is real, and we want to be supportive. We understand Real ID is something that has to be done, but if it means putting some of our offices out of business without due consideration, I would conclude my comments with that, and take questions if necessary. Thank you,
Mr. Kosnick has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted the first question. I just have two.
First one is, if the Deputy Registrar, Mr. Hurst, if you could, are there biometric requirements in this bill that...
Mr. Hurst.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Cosney, are you talking about as far as the camera is concerned for photo taking?
Representative Cosney?
If there would be biometric data collected in order to obtain either forms of the licenses that would be required through the Register's office, or that it would be in this bill.
Mr. Hurst.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Cosney, I'm afraid I'm not familiar one way or the other as far as whether that's required in this bill of our offices. I apologize. I'll get back to you.
Thank you. Does the author have any answer for that particular question?
Mr. Chair, Representative of the Department would be best served to answer that question.
Thank you. Another question, Representative Cosby.
Okay. And thank you, Mr. Chair. The other question was, and maybe better suited for the Department as well, talking about the numbers that would impact the Deputy Registrar's office. I was curious what the Department's estimate might be of how many Minnesotans would actually apply and what assumptions were used in the fiscal note. How many, what the percentage of Minnesotans that would obtain a real ID may be?
If neither of you has an answer for that, I'm going to wait and call the department down after we finish our list of testifiers, just in case other department questions are, you know, kind of elicited by the conversation.
Mr. Chair, I could answer briefly.
Thank you.
The department has summarized, Mr. Chair, Representative, that 90% of Minnesotans with a driver's license will sign up for a real ID. 90.
Thank you. Representative Bernardi has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hurst, I wanted to ask you a question. Is this a type of unfunded mandate? Would you consider it a type of unfunded mandate for the locals?
Mr. Hurst.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Bernardi, you know, deputy registrars, it's not unique for them to do what we commonly refer to as no-fee transactions. We don't like them. For example, you know, if a customer comes in and they need assistance with something, but at the end of the time we don't get any money for a filing fee from it, it's, you know, it happens, and we understand that. But when something on a scale of this magnitude, I would, as it's currently laid out in the bill, I would say it does harbor very close to being an unfunded mandate. There's no other way around it.
Thank you, Mr. Hurst. I have no more questions for you. Next up, we have Lars Negsted, Policy Director of ISAIAH. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your brief testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Lars Negsted. I'm Policy Director for ISAIAH. ISAIAH is a statewide network of clergy, congregations, and people of faith working for racial and economic justice. So I'm here today to speak about the issue around immigrants' access to driver's license, which has been covered, but I just want to kind of cut to the chase. So it used to be that you did not need to show any form of immigration status to get a driver's license. That changed in Minnesota in 2003, through an expedited rulemaking process under Governor Pawlenty, and that was put into place by Charlie Weaver, who was the DPS commissioner at the time. Minnesota is one of the last states to adopt Real ID, but eight states do have Real ID plus immigrant access to driver's license. There's no reason that we can't do that here and pass a Real ID and keep that option at least open for those who want driver's licenses only, whether for privacy or immigration status concerns. The Senate bill, I will point out, last year did this with strong bipartisan support. There were 12 Republican senators on the Real ID bill last year. There's an amazing coalition that you've heard from many voices today, including business. There's also law enforcement, faith, and labor groups that all think the legislature should do it this way. And it's only this bill that insists on the anti-immigrant provision in this Real ID language. So I know, speaking as a person of faith, I come out of the Christian tradition. I know many of you also take your faith very seriously, also come out of the Christian tradition, and we think the Bible is very clear about this. In Leviticus chapter 19, verse 34, the foreigner residing among you must be treated as your native born. Love them as yourself, for you were foreigners in Egypt. I am the Lord your God. That is pretty clear. Also, in the New Testament, in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 25, starting with verse 31 through 45, I won't read the whole thing, but I do encourage you to look it up. It ends with, you did not do this for the least of these, so you did not do it for me. I will encourage you to think about the least of these among us, who include immigrants who are here, who are here with families, trying to get to work, trying to get to school, trying to get to church, trying to keep their families safe, trying to keep from being torn apart, deported in some cases to countries that they have only known as an infant. That is not the Minnesota that we are called to be. And I would urge you to search your conscience and to support the amendment that will be coming to strip this unnecessary and harmful language out of the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Negstead. I do not see any questions. Next, Daniel Robinson, attorney for the Center of Immigrant Justice, followed by Michelle McKenzie. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Danielle Robinson-Briand. I'm an immigration attorney at the Center for Immigrant Justice in Minneapolis, also a member of the Minnesota Immigrant Rights Action Committee and chair of the State and Local Committee of the Minnesota Dakotas Chapter of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. As chief author of House File 3, Representative Smith has been unacceptably vague in committee meetings this year about why his version of the Real ID bill specifically excludes undocumented immigrants from applying for a second-tier non-compliant driver's license. As we've discussed so far today, this is not our first go-around on Real ID, which failed to pass last year literally in the 11th hour of the legislative session, owing to a collapse in conference committee negotiations on this very issue. In a post-session review, the Pioneer Press highlighted the legislature's failure to pass Real ID, saying that a related issue tucked into the Real ID debate proved its demise. The idea of allowing undocumented immigrants to receive driver's licenses. Many senators hope that the state moves in that direction. Many House members do not. Representative Smith himself discussed the inability of the legislature to achieve Real ID compliance last year in a letter to his constituents, throwing blame on the Senate for, quote, holding Minnesota driver's licenses hostage because of controversial special interests, end quote, and, quote, by pushing their fringe agenda, end quote. Sadly, Representative Smith's words reveal a gross misapprehension of this issue and a complete disregard for the public policy considerations that have driven so many other states to pass Real ID legislation that allows undocumented immigrants to access a driving-only license. In fact, there was bipartisan support for this kind of license last year in the Senate, and data shows there is a clear trend around the country for this kind of license, or toward including undocumented immigrants into state licensing systems. This includes legislation passed since 2013 in California, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, D.C., Hawaii, Illinois, Maryland, New Mexico, Nevada, Puerto Rico, Utah, and Vermont. Each of these jurisdictions also fully comply with federal Real ID requirements. Let us move beyond the false debate that has been presented to us thus far on this issue, that including an immigrant exclusion into the statute does nothing to change our law. It is a significant deviation from the status quo, as the lawful presence requirement was added through rulemaking in the early 2000s, not through statute. And we must ask ourselves instead about why the trend is swinging in the direction of licensing more drivers. That is because legislators in other states have left the immigration politics aside and attuned themselves to the critical public policy issues at stake in creating a license for the undocumented drivers in their state. Governor Danielle Molloy of Connecticut had this to say about a Real ID compliant bill passed in Connecticut in 2013 that allows undocumented immigrants to obtain driver's licenses, register their vehicles, and get insurance. This bill is first and foremost about public safety. It's about knowing who is driving on our roads and doing everything we can to make sure those drivers are safe and that they're operating registered, insured vehicles. I bring up the Connecticut example because I lived there when this debate was playing out in the legislature, and I remember well that a commitment to improving road safety was the principal rallying point for both sides of the aisle to come together to pass the legislation. Much like Minnesota, Connecticut is a car-dependent society that has an underdeveloped public transportation system. This bill was passed, at the time prior to passing the bill, there were tens of thousands of undocumented drivers who were driving on the roadways in order to get to work, school, and attend to their daily lives. That is the current situation here in Minnesota, tens of thousands of undocumented drivers. I implore you to broaden this discussion on Real ID and encourage you, our elected leaders, to ask more relevant questions, such as, why aren't we more concerned about improving public safety in Minnesota? Why aren't we asking for data from these other states to evaluate whether undocumented immigrants are in fact getting driver's licenses and obtaining car insurance, and whether there's data to show an improvement in road safety as a result of these laws? These are the kinds of questions that deserve answers before we move this legislation forward with a lawful presence requirement for the driving-only license. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Howe has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And could the testifier or maybe the author of the bill give us a little bit of history of bills that have been introduced regarding this driver's license issue since 2003? To give us a little history of how when that changed in 2003, how that's been promulgated and what the thought process is to try and resolve this issue since 2003.
I don't know who you want to go first. Do you want to take that? Okay, so...
And I'm just going to caution you to be brief. We are
very brief.
Running out of time.
Last year was the first year that our legislature here in Minnesota dealt with Real ID, but prior to that, I think since the mid-2000s, 2008 or so, there were proposals, bills to extend driving privileges to undocumented immigrants, not necessarily dealing at all with federal Real ID compliance.
Thank you. A follow-up, Representative Howe? Thank you. Thank you for your testimony today. We have three more testifiers on the list. I'm going to ask them to be brief. Michelle McKenzie is followed by Tim Dolan. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you. My name is Michelle Garnett McKenzie. I am Deputy Director of the Advocates for Human Rights. Thank you for having this hearing today. The Advocates is a nonprofit organization based here in Minnesota. We engage over 1,000 volunteers each year in promoting and protecting internationally recognized human rights standards. And our office last year represented more than 700 asylum seekers, people fleeing persecution, torture, and trafficking in proceedings before the federal government. I will be very brief. Much has been addressed already, but I do want to clarify that line 6.25 does not relate to Real ID compliance. Section 10 of the bill, beginning at line 8.11, does. Instead, line 6.25 would go beyond Minnesota's existing regulatory requirement and would narrow the list of acceptable documents to those described in federal law, not Minnesota rules, but in federal law at 6 CFR 0.37. Those acceptable documents, that list knocks 8 documents by my quick reconciling with existing rules off the list of those that can currently be presented today. It doubles down on the current regulatory restrictions. Those restrictions did receive numerous hearings prior to 2003 when they were enacted as emergency rules. And those have placed a significant burden on our lawfully present asylum seekers in getting the ability to drive here in Minnesota while their cases are pending, sometimes for years as the federal government fails to act on people's claims for asylum, but while they cannot have permission to work and the ID necessary to get a license even today. Allowing line 6.25 to be included in this bill, which purports to deal with Real ID, blocks that important discussion that we have talked about already, that of whether driver's licenses for undocumented Minnesotans make sense for a variety of public policy reasons aside from immigration politics. This legislature has engaged in that thoughtful discussion and should not have an unrelated issue, that of real ID compliance, which is essential to us for our travel industry, for many other reasons, being bogged down with that issue. I would just remind you that a vote to delete the amend or amend line 6.25 is not a vote to give undocumented Minnesotans a chance to drive in this state. The rules are already in place that block that. But a vote to allow line 6.25 to remain in this bill, despite having nothing to do with real ID, is a clear statement against Minnesota's values of inclusion and welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McKenzie. Next, we have Tim Dolan. Following Tim Dolan, we have Wayne Buchholz. Welcome to the testifiers table. Please identify yourself for the record. I'm going to ask you to be very brief.
Yes, my name is Tim Nolan. I'm a great-grandson of early pioneer. I was born March 21st, 1941 at St. Mary's Hospital, which is now Minnesota Health. Anyway, in 1955, I went to Canada to play hockey. All we needed to crow was my birth certificate, certified birth certificate. The team was all in the bus, and the customs came up and went through the IDs and motioned us through. In 1997, I left for Ireland. I went through customs in Ireland. He said, excuse me, sir, do you realize your passport's going to expire in 2 weeks? They said, well, I'll be back. But anyway, coming back in New York, they waved us through. In 1999, I had my identity stolen. That's when we had the plastic card. And I lobbied for now we have to, it's now photo ID. And I had the policy was that I had ever got stopped that I had to show two picture IDs with them with my ID. But anyway, I'm here in opposition of any form. And being a firefighter for the 9/11 truth, it's just, this is all a pack of lies. Since 9/11, every single person has become a suspect. That's the way it is, the patriarchy and the homeland security and all that. I think we should start simplifying things, and let's work smarter, not harder. This is looking at it as a conservative point of view. We can. What's wrong with what we have already? With just the passport and with the ID. We've heard other people testify what it's going to cost. If I plan on going back to my March 21st, I'll be 76. I'm thinking about crossing the Atlantic like Lindbergh did as a celebration, going there again in October. What will I have to have? How much will it cost me just in a passport and a real ID and all that stuff? Let's work, like I said, let's work smarter. Let's work together. This is a bipartisan situation. Let's get back in a vibrant economy. Let's be the envy of the planet. If we don't, I will personally run for Attorney General and author exit strategy the state of Minnesota annexed with Canada to become the 11th Providence. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nolan. A novel idea. Next, we have Wayne Buchholz, followed by our final testifier, Javita Morales. Please identify yourself for the record, Mr. Buchholz.
Good afternoon. My name is Wayne Buchholz. I'm just a taxpayer. But listening to all this real ID, the thing that's got me more upset than anything else is that the bill writer, the airlines, everybody else is referring to this as we are on a deadline from the federal government. The federal government does not hold power over the states. The states hold power over the federal government. When are we going to get back to this? I mean, it's plain and simple. It's an illegal law. They passed it. It's illegal. They can't do it. They don't have the power to do it. Plain and simple.
Thank you, Mr. Buchholz. I do not see any questions for you. Final testifier, Javita Morales. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Hi, Chair and members of the community. My name is Jovita, and I'm from, I'm part of the members of the community. I'm an undocumented person. I came when I have 15 years old in here. My parents brought me without knowing that I was coming to the United States. I learned the English in here as my third language. My native language in Mexico is Mazahua. I have two young, my daughter and my son, who are in college right now. And I started driving a car without driver's license in 2007. I was first when the 35W bridge collapsed. I had a necessity to drive a vehicle because of the accident of what happened to my kids. And I have to, I'm a single mom, so I have to drive in, and my family have my partner, and we have to drive with them to the clinic and take them to the police. And I was, afraid to drive in because I didn't know, I didn't have any chance to make the, you know, to go to the police and take the test. So my friends who knows the, who had a driver license, because they have available to qualify for it, they teach me how to drive the vehicle correctly. I was reading those books in Spanish to trying to learn how to drive safely for my families. And it's so important for me to have a driver license because it's a necessity right now. And here in Minnesota, I've been living for 21 years in my family right now. It's so a really, really powerful family that they're going to college. My niece is still working hard to work at the same time and survive. And then, to all life that we have. But in this point, I'm asking you, each one of you, all the families who are here and many of our different cases like mine, but even though I'm here, I know that I break the law, but this is the life. I'm asking you right now to consider it and support and take this amendment, the line 6.25, because I think it's so important that everyone's deserve in this Minnesota, and I think everyone should have a driver license. No matter if your status is not a citizen, but you are driving safely, it's not only for me, it's including you, because if I'm going to have a crash with you, I don't have any insurance right now, because every single time when we're trying to get a driver license with the insurance, if you don't have a driver, an insurance or a driver license, it's really hard to have insurance with your car, and it's really hard to pay for the people in case you have an accident. Also, it's not only the people who doesn't have a driver license that provoke this accident. It's also people who have a driver license provoke accidents, and who's going to pay for us to in case we have those situations. So thinking of every single in a different aspect, we are here, and we are I'm really working strongly with each one of you to build a way that we can work together and serve for our family, because we are, I think, everyone have a child, children that you are taking care of them. You are here and fighting for your community, and you are here to serve them, and you are here to find a way that how we're going to have access for everyone who needs any kind of needs. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. I do not see any questions. The department, I would like to call someone down from the department to answer a couple of quick questions before we proceed to the amendment. Good afternoon. Please identify yourself for the record, then I'll ask Representative Kosnick to repeat his question.
For the record, my name is Don Olson. I'm the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services.
Thank you. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the department. The question was asking about the biometric requirements, if there are any in the Real ID bill, and then the second was just kind of your estimates of how many people do you think would get a Real ID. Representative Smith had said something. I think he said 90. It seems like an awful lot of people would want to get a Real ID.
Thank you. Ms. Olson, what should be?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, there is no requirement for biometrics in our fiscal note, and that is not our intention in our review. To answer the second part of your question about how many people we would anticipate that would come in for the Real ID, we really have no way of knowing exactly the number of people that would come in, so we based our estimate on the number of people that would have renewed during the period when a Real ID card was not available, and our estimate is 1.28 million people. So that was where our fiscal note came in, is we would assume if people hear free, they would probably want to come in and apply for a card under that program.
Thank you. Next, I have a question from Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Deputy Commissioner, one of the earlier testifiers handed out some information. I remember having this discussion a year or two ago about some grants that the Department of Public Safety accepted from the Department of Homeland Security. Can you characterize what those grants are? It appears that maybe your department was actually applying for those grants, which appears to me might have been in violation of the law around Real ID that existed at the time.
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I was not really prepared to talk about those grants today because I haven't seen the documentation. But what I do know of the grants that we did receive, they were used to enhance security on our current system and to get us in compliance with the EDL license. So it had nothing to do with Real ID. It was the EDL.
Follow-up, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, the information I have suggests that those came from the Department of Homeland Security and were actually characterized by them as Real ID in their purpose. I'm curious, do we know when the department applied for those grants? Do we know what the date was of the application?
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I would prefer to go back and get the details around that because, like I said, I wasn't prepared to talk about the grants today. But we did gather information last year based on questions that were proposed to the department about the grants and how that funding was used, and we can get you that information.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. You'll be back with us in the future, so please have that information with you when you come back.
Absolutely.
We'd appreciate that very much. I do not see any other questions. We have an amendment before us. I don't have a name on it, but I believe Representative Hornstein would like to move the A7.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm moving the A7 amendment, and many of the arguments in its favor were made by testifiers, so I'm just going to quickly review because we are running out of time here, the rationale for this. And I want to repeat that first and foremost, approving this amendment will not impact implementation of Real ID. Let me reiterate, will not affect implementation of Real ID. What this amendment does is simply removes the statutory language around aspiring citizens that we've talked about for quite a while today, the ability of aspiring citizens to obtain driver's licenses. So we approve this amendment. Real ID will move forward. Minnesotans will be able to board airplanes, will be able to go on to military bases and other federal facilities as needed. So I wanted to make that very clear. The second point, and since we are the Transportation Committee, it is very important to understand that we all pay a price when a certain segment of the population, our aspiring citizens, are not taking proper driver education classes, are not obtaining licenses, and are driving without insurance. So this is, at its core, a public safety issue. And finally, I would reiterate what we heard from the business community. In their letter that you have in your packets that was written to us a couple of years ago, they talk about a previous bill that I believe Representative Hamilton was the author of, a bipartisan bill, that at that time House File 97 improves public safety on our roads and highways. And just note that this letter was signed by the Minnesota Agri-Growth Council, the Midwest Food Processors Association, We heard from the Minnesota milk producers earlier, the Chamber of Commerce, the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association, and the Minnesota Restaurant Association. And we also have, again, many faith groups, other business groups, law enforcement. Law enforcement supports the ability of aspiring citizens to get driver's license. And then the final point, Mr. Chair, is that and we've heard that this will not have an impact on future legislatures, that we're always free to act on a separate bill. But the effect of having this rule placed in statute is it will tie our hands. It will tie the hands of this and future legislatures. It will make it far more difficult for us to do what I think a goal that many of us share on a bipartisan basis is the ability for our aspiring citizens to obtain driver's license. So having this statutory prohibition on aspiring citizens' driver's license is unneeded, it's unnecessary to this bill, it's unnecessary for Real ID, and it will make it very difficult for us to move forward on ensuring that they do have that ability. As has been mentioned, is the case in 14 states, 11 states doing it just very recently. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions from the committee.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. There is a technical piece to this bill, to this amendment, that Mr. Burris wanted mentioned to me that he would like to address the committee on
in terms of implementation.
Mr. Chair and members, a modification to the A7 amendment is being distributed. This has the same substantive policy impact as the original A7 amendment. And what prompts it is the author's amendment that had been adopted by the committee earlier, the A9. That A9 amendment made some changes in restructuring the area of the bill that this A7 amendment deals with. So it created some technical conflicts in the conforming changes. So what's being distributed addresses that by amending both the underlying bill, the House File 3 first engrossment, as well as the A9 amendment in order to achieve the substantive policy goal of this A7 amendment of eliminating the statutory language around evidence of lawful presence. And I can get into the technical details further if there are any questions around that.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. To the author of the amendment, Representative Hornstein, do you believe that these changes are appropriate?
Correct. So, Mr. Chair, I guess I would withdraw the other amendment, and the A7A amendment would be before us. And before I forget, I would like to have a roll call on the amendment as well as the final bill.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. So instead of considering the A7 as presented, we are considering the A7A as amended, or as presented, actually, not amended. Right. Thank you for that. And with that, are there any other Representative Rarick, I believe, had a question.
I want to see the new amendment. My question is in regards to we're being told that this will have no effect. And as I read the original amendment, when we look on line 6.18, that part B, it's telling us all applications must be accompanied by the provisions below it. Line 6.25 that we would be taking out, if we remove that, I would like clarification if under the Real ID provision that requires that but from the federal government, would we then be removing that provision from Minnesota law and not having our Real ID be federally compliant? Because I believe, as I read this, 1, 2, and 3 are required for all applications, and then we'd be removing one of the critical parts of the federally compliant ID. So I understand what the amendment was trying to do, but I have a feeling it was this one isn't quite doing it.
Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rarick, my understanding is that's covered in Section 10 on 8.11. So I think that we're clear on the fact that Real ID will move forward with the adoption of the A7A amendment.
But Mr. Chair, I guess I would like to know from research if they agree with that.
Mr. Burris, do you have any comments on this question?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rarick, my reading is that the if the amendment were adopted, that lawful status would still be a requirement for real ID applicants as well as applicants for a non-compliant license. That's because the administrative rules around that would still apply, and it would really go to the Department of Homeland Security as to whether the legal structure between the combination of administrative rules and what's set in statute would be considered sufficient for DHS to deem state-issued cards as Real ID compliant. I guess if I had to guess, I would tend towards guessing that a structure that has administrative rules would be sufficient. But ultimately, that would be a decision of DHS, and I don't know. The department might have further comments on that.
Unless someone has something very pertinent, I think we are prepared to move to a vote on the amendment. If you'd like to renew your motion, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I renew my motion that we consider the A7A amendment.
The Secretary will take the roll.
Torkelson?
No.
Petersburg?
No.
Hornstein?
Yes.
Baker?
No.
Barr?
No.
Bernardi?
Yes.
Daniels?
No.
Drazkowski?
No.
Gunther?
No.
Hoseman?
Yes.
Howe?
Nay.
Johnson?
Yes.
Keel?
No.
Kosnick?
No.
Lucero?
No.
Mason?
Yes.
Miller?
No.
Nelson?
Yes.
Rarick?
No.
Rosenthal?
Yes.
Runbeck?
No.
Selk?
Yes.
Sedin?
Yes.
The vote being 9 in favor, 14 against, the amendment fails. Next, we will move to final comments from the author before we vote on the bill.
Mr. Chair, members, I ask for your support.
I'm going to interrupt you. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to reiterate that we'd like a roll call on the final.
Yes,
vote.
I've got that. Okay. Did you want to make any final comments on the bill before the author? Thank you. Representative Mason, very quickly.
Okay, thank you. I just want to get back to the comment about this being a controversial bill, because I find it hard to believe I'm the only one that has got all of these emails and phone calls from people. On the one hand, we've got people who want this or are opposing this because of a matter of principle or ideology. On the other hand, I've got people who are dealing with airlines, travel, other businesses in the military that want it passed. So, again, I'm asking that we do the best job we can in getting a bill that is going to satisfy or at least get something done to make it possible for our people to do their business in an easy manner. And I don't think your bill as is does it.
Thank you for your comments, Representative Mason. Representative Smith, a final comment on the bill, and then we're moving to a vote.
Mr. Chair, members, I ask for your support.
Thank you. Secretary will take the roll.
Torkelson?
Yes.
Petersburg?
Yes.
Hornstein?
No.
Baker?
Aye.
Barr?
Yes.
Bernardi?
No.
Daniels?
Yes.
Drazkowski?
No.
Gunther?
Yes.
Hausman?
No.
Howe?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Keel?
Yes.
Kosnick?
Yes.
Lucero?
No.
Mason?
No.
Miller?
Yes.
Nelson?
No.
Rarick?
Yes.
Rosenthal?
No.
Runbeck?
Yes.
Selk?
No.
And Sedin?
No.
With 12 ayes and 11 noes, the bill is passed and referred to the Ways and Means Committee. This meeting is adjourned.